It's the Truepenny Show with your host, James Truepenny.
Hello, welcome to the Truepenny Show. My name is James Truepenny. This is my show. And today we are back on the continuing story of the Beginner's Guide to Professional Wrestling in Japan with UWF 5 versus New Japan Pro Wrestling. Last week we looked at with Chelsea at a UWF I card from 1993. We're now moving on to 1995. And to join me to discuss UWF I in 1995 is Mr. Marcus Green. How are you?
I'm good. Glad to be back.
Yeah. Now this is going to be a trifecta of shows, like we said. Next, we're going to look at UWF I versus New Japan from the New Japan World Network and what matches they have on there. But this week, we're back on stuff you can find on YouTube, the UWF I version of this particular feud. So we'll explain the setup of this particular feud. Back in 1993, when we watched UWF I last week, UWF I was going great guns. It was selling out houses. It was doing good shows. Nobuhiko Takada was a major star. It was doing incredible things. However, these things can't last forever, especially when you're in a style of wrestling that burns through wrestlers at an alarming rate of knots. And after not long, the bills started to mount up, and so they started to bring in people like Big Van Vader, known as Super Vader, and Gary Albright started to get a big push, and it started to be a bit more like a traditional pro wrestling company, which didn't really make people happy, like Luthez or Danny Hodge or the older generation that had been endorsing the product, because it was becoming more like New Japan and it was becoming more like All Japan. So as a result of that, they had to do something to make wrestling more interesting and to make more money, because they were starting to lose money hand over fist. Okay, so they went to New Japan Pro Wrestling and floated the idea of a promotion versus promotion card, which was not a bad idea. And we're going to talk about some of the wrestling from that today, but it wasn't necessarily a great idea for UWFI, considering the fact that they were at New Japan's mercy, because they needed New Japan, and New Japan did not need them. So what do you think of this idea, first of all, Marcus, of cross-promotion in 1995?
I think it was good. Like I said, at the time, it worked, but I could see just, you know, obviously hearing that that wonderful rundown that you just did, how it wouldn't necessarily be sustainable, because the reason why they had to do the joint show in the first place was essentially because they were, you know, I guess their bread and butter was kind of causing the bleed, if you will.
Yeah, definitely.
Because, like you said, because of the burnout rate, you know, obviously the style is appreciated and, you know, it's very much become accustomed and almost really the foundation of what we get today, but it's not conducive long term, and New Japan has been around as long as it has because it's always thought about, you know, long term booking both in front of and behind the camera. So,
yeah, definitely. Right then, well, let's get to this card. We are back at Osaka Japan Prefectural Gymnasium, better known to you and me as Osaka Joe Hall. 5,200 fans turned up to see this card on the 11th of October 1995, 23 years ago, and it holds up surprisingly well. It's a very modern style product, and like we talked about last week, it takes some getting used to watching this style of professional wrestling, and you have to, this one is a lot more obviously a professional wrestling show. The style has calmed down a lot compared to when 2 years ago, or last week as we watched it with Chelsea. The differences are quite stark. It's not as high impact as it was because they're starting to realize how much this hurts. And it does look more like people trying to not kill each other. So let's get your opinions on some of these rising stars in this particular company. The opening match on this particular card was Kazushi Sakuraba, Hiromitsu Kanahara, and they wrestled Tadayu Yasuda and Tokimitsu Ishizawa. Now, Kazushi Sakuraba and Hiromitsu Kanahara ended up being actually really, really good UFC fighters, so we'll talk about them in a moment. And Tadayu Yasuda and Tokimitsu Ishizawa. Yasuda was a former sumo who was making his way in the professional wrestling game. He would have a big, strong run in New Japan and in other promotions as well. Ishizawa, not so much. He was a young boy coming through who I haven't really found out too much about. But what did you think of this matchup, first of all, Marcus? And what do you think of the clash of styles between the two?
I dug it, and it kind of set the tone for the night. You know, obviously I had to make myself, you know, alert to who was who. Once I got that settled, it became clear. Also, I mean, it kind of, you know, you kind of saw what Styles lended to, you know, guys in terms of experience or whatnot. I mean, the guys in the black almost kind of came off. Because now, of course, in this era of New Japan, I'm used to the all black being young boys.
Yeah, yeah.
Which I had quickly washed from my mind. But it did seem like, you know, they kind of had maybe an experience disadvantage. Not necessarily lacking any will or moxie, but, you know, just the experience advantage, you know, of course, adding in the submissions and whatnot. Sometimes that kind of supersedes, you know, the stand up martial arts, because once you get on that ground, it's just a different ball game. So, you know, but like I said, it created a good foundation for the rest of the show, and I think kicking off with the tag matches definitely created an interesting dynamic.
Yeah, it definitely. You know, these matches were, well, a bit strange, really, to see people going against each other of completely differing styles. We should talk about the individuals a little bit. Hiromitsu Kanahara ended up going to Pride. He ended up going to UFC as well and fought for them and had a fairly successful career. Lost more than he won, we'll say, with a few draws, and worked, you know, pretty successfully. Had a couple of wins in UFC, but nothing particularly great in his actual fighting career. Kazushi Sakuraba, though, we're much more familiar with. He is the Gracie Hunter. He is a guy who kind of ended up in UFC by accident. He was an alternate, and everyone believed because he was a pro wrestler, he wouldn't get very far. So Sakuraba won a UFC championship one night, despite being 183 pounds and winning the heavyweight division. So he was pretty good, you know. And also, he came back to New Japan Pro Wrestling, was a star in New Japan Pro Wrestling in 2012 to 2016. No longer working for New Japan Pro Wrestling. Now working in a company with Josh Barnett, and a mixed martial arts team company. So he was incredibly influential and went on to be a massive star in MMA, maybe not so much in pro wrestling. Hiroitsu Kanahara, like I said, was also a pro as well. So, yeah, this was kind of more influential much later down the line, because obviously Sakuraba and Kanahara were young boys. Yasada had only just got into the industry, and Ishizawa had only just got into the industry as well. It was kind of a like-for-like matchup.
Yeah. That's actually, wow, 183 pounds. That's, yeah, quite good at his job.
Yes, I would recommend, if you prefer his wrestling stuff, I would recommend you look at Wrestle Kingdom. I believe it's 9, where he wrestled Minoru Suzuki in a UWFI rules match, which was insane.
Yeah, nice. And another thing, like I said, that kind of kicked off this show, it kind of bookended, because going into this, obviously, I'm used to just kind of my introduction to UWF. I'm mostly used to, you know, what's become in New Japan, so I'm kind of, I guess you could say, bias coming into the show in terms of who's going to win in my mind, and it didn't necessarily go like that. that was definitely refreshing, because, again, the whole point of this is, while, you know, the whole concept is predetermined, the styles create the environment the way anything can, kind of any given Sunday type of vibe.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. There's a certain level of upset. You can possible upsets you see every match with this, which you don't necessarily see with other forms of pro wrestling, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
All right, the next match was Yoshihiro Takayama, our buddy Yoshihiro Takayama, versus Kenichi Yamamoto. In a pretty straight-up fight, it was, I think it went about 15 minutes. This one did have points on it. The previous matches, the UWF versus New Japan matches, didn't have points, so I should explain the point system, because Marcus, you probably don't know this one either, unless you assume you listened to last week's show. So each wrestler starts with 15 points. Every time they touch a rope, they lose a point. First person to 0 points loses if you don't get a submission or a knockout victory in the time limit. Whereas this one, Yoshihiro Takayama with Kenichi Yamamoto, was a much more kind of a closer affair. Takayama is still an awesome presence of a wrestler. At this time, he was just kind of growing into himself. He would become bigger and taller and stronger, and was such a brilliant person at throwing people about. As we discussed last week, Takayama is currently disabled, unfortunately, from an accident in a match in DDT last year. Marcus, what did you think of this matchup?
I dug it. A lot of it had to do with it kind of goes back to That classic collegiate style vibes.
Yeah.
And which is why I was partially familiar with the point system. Of course, once you start seeing how it was going, and you kind of catch on fairly quick. But yeah, I mean, you know, that really sucks to hear that. You know, God bless Takayama. You know, he, like you said, he got bigger, faster, and stronger. But even now, just looking at this match, it seems like he had a pretty much good handle on, you know, his positioning, his height, his strength. You know, didn't ever come off as awkward at any time.
Yeah.
Which is not always something I'm used to in Americanized style of wrestling. A lot of these guys are who come in that they maybe have his size and strength, kind of just kind of coast on the bumblingness of it all, and you know, kind of make up for their lack of coordination with their power.
Yeah.
And it kind of felt like he definitely had a good handle on it. Of course, Yamamoto, you know, while obviously there was a size difference and power difference, he very much brought a lot of the moxie to it, which I appreciated. Even though he kind of, you know, obviously Takayama had, you know, very much an advantage over him. You know, he didn't ever yield to him in any way. Obviously, he would be on the losing end of the match, but it definitely was a fight, and Takayama definitely gave him respect throughout the match.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, the next matchup was Naoko Sano versus Billy Scott. Billy Scott, we talked about last week, absolutely gorgeous mullet. Like the perfect 90s mullet. Not too party at the back, reserved, but yet organized at the front in a way that you very rarely find these days. Naoko Sano's very good.
Yeah, definitely have no problem differentiating who was who in this match.
No. There's the white gentleman over there, yes.
Exactly. yeah, but this was another good one. Another good one, straight up and down, obviously. Point system again, right?
Yeah, this one was a traditional UWFI match. And I'd kind of like it because it's different. And you kind of see how things are going along. It's another layer to the story. I know me and Chelsea kind of discussed this last week. Like, there's a lack of drama there. When she was watching it last week, this was kind of at the beginning of UWFI, really. She was kind of like pointing out there's a lack of drama, which kind of pour her off. But I think now the wrestlers have got better and can work within their environment a lot better. I think it actually adds a layer to it.
That's interesting, and I'm very much really on your side of it, because like I said, I think that's what, you know, part of me saying I kind of had to kind of debug my brain, because I am so used.
Yeah, yeah.
You get so used to the drama of it over here that you almost lose appreciation for the actual skill.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is why I appreciated it here, because it really is a game of strategy, positioning, and leverage.
Mm.
And that's not easy, because you very much have to be aware of where you are at all times, where your opponent is, where they could go.
Yeah.
Where you immediately have to go should they shift, and it's very much like a quick game of chess, and you know, which creates the opening for sudden losses of victories, which, you know, really makes it, like I said, that kind of any given Sunday type vibe, which makes it more interesting to watch, in my opinion, because over here, you know, with the characters and how certain things are set up, and a lot of times you can kind of telegraph stuff if you've been watching it long enough, you kind of know how things are going to go.
Yeah,
which really kind of takes the vibe out of it a lot of times. But for this, I would very much appreciate the skill, because one minute a guy could have been riding a guy for 20 minutes, and then they get up after losing a point and get stunned by a kick, and it's a wrap.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting. Definitely, just interesting way going about it. To give you some notes, Naoki Sano ended up being a mixed martial arts fighter. He fought for Pride and for Pancras, and also he continued his wrestling career. He worked for Pro Wrestling NOAH from 2001 to 2012, worked on the independent circuit. He entered the Super J Cup one year when it was held by Michinoku Pro Wrestling. So he's done a lot. He did an awful lot in the general wrestling world, aside from being in UWFI, but probably more famous as a shoot fighter for his work in Pride. So, you know, again, two guys who had long careers long after UWFI was really going, and maybe that is the lasting legacy of UWFI. It kind of had an inglorious end, but it gave an awful lot of people an awful lot of work and gave them a grounding and a style that would become incredibly influential.
Yeah, it did. And I think that's... it's almost like a relay race. Like they had the baton, and New Japan kind of took it and finished it. if you will.
Yeah.
Because, you know, like you said, that style wasn't necessarily full-on sustainable long-term as it was, but New Japan has been able to take it and kind of build upon it and, you know, very much, you know, do what they're doing today and you know, very much merging with American style and kind of finding a happy medium in both that shoot style and the drama of it all.
Yeah.
Because you see what's going on with the characters. So, you know, you're very much invested there from the drama standpoint, but then you kind of let the shoot style and the ring carry it off from there. So.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at guys like Kushida and Zack Sabre Jr., certainly Minoru Suzuki, obviously, because he comes from this background. He wasn't a UWF guy, but he was a PWFG guy and a UWF guy. There's plenty of people in the New Japan locker room who work this style in a pro way. You know, we talked about it. Shayna Baszler is probably the closest to a UWF wrestler you'll get in North America. And she's very, very good at it. Doesn't run the ropes, does everything within the ring, keeps everything within the bounds of reality, you know, because that was the Billy Robinson way. That was the Josh Barnett way, because that's the way she was taught to do it. And she's actually probably surpassed her mentors in her approach, really, of making pro wrestling work from a shoot style. And like in the presentation way. I'm not saying she's better than Billy Robinson. she isn't. No, and she isn't better than Josh Barnett, but she's certainly got more notice with that style quicker.
And that's crazy. And again, as a, you know, somebody who's so used to the over dramatization of a lot of the, you know, the bare necessities when it comes to this stuff, the foundation of you know, the skill set, you see somebody like Shayna Baszler, and if you don't bring something like that up, you really don't notice it and really don't appreciate it.
No.
Because, you know, thinking back to a match, I think between, was years ago, maybe it was a Royal Rumble, at the Royal Rumble, where I think it was like Benoit and Kurt Angle had a match.
Yeah, it was WrestleMania. I know the submission match they had.
Yeah, and they never left like the middle of the ring.
No.
And you really don't know how, you know, special that is, and how, you know, it takes skill to be able to do something like that and keep, you know, eyes drawn on you. And, you know, looking at somebody like Shayna Baszler, who's very much still new to this game. In a lot of aspects in terms of how wrestling is presented now and just how quickly she's adapted. She's underrated in that way for being able to do that stuff and, you know, going against somebody like Kairi Sane, who's extremely skilled.
Yeah.
And being able to do what she does and just add little pieces, whether it be facial expressions or just overall aggression, you know, the kind of compliment from the more non-dramatics of it all, to leaving the ring, to hitting the ropes, to not doing 50 dives, you know, that whole ordeal. So, you know, in that race, she's very underrated.
Yeah, definitely. You know, it's very much, it's a taste thing. I know people, we're talking to somebody on Twitter this week who said she was unrealistic, and I'm like, no. But she was like, well, she doesn't move quick enough. It's like, well, in a real fight, you wouldn't move quickly at all. You know, what you, this comes down to like what you think is real. What is your reality? You know, so the Manic Street Peaches album, This Is My Truth, Now Tell Me Yours. You know, that's what this kind of boils down to. This is like what you perceive good wrestling to be, and that's a whole different issue. If people are still watching it and she's drawing money, then it doesn't matter what you think. You know, there's plenty of wrestlers I can't stand who are on television all the time. But they draw money, just not my thing. Not my cup of tea.
It's funny because it's supposed to, you know, that style is supposed to simulate a real fight. And in a real fight, if you do the right move at the right time, you won't have to move around much because it'll be damn near over.
Yes. Do the right thing at the right time. It'll be over very, very, very quickly. Anywho, shall we move on to the next match, which featured Kensuke Sasaki versus Tetsuya Nakano, New Japan Pro Wrestling versus UWFI. Kensuke Sasaki, by this point, was a major star in New Japan Wrestling. Riki Chosu was his mentor. He had that incredible tag team with Hiro Hase, who had a big feud with the Steiner Brothers in the early 90s. He'd become part of the Hell Warriors with Road Warrior Hawk, because when Road Warrior Hawk left the WWE, he went to New Japan Pro Wrestling, and because there was no animal with him, he made a tag team with Kensuke Sasaki, called the Hell Warriors, because that's the best name ever for a tag team. The Hell Ray. I got it right. The Hell Raisers. Afterwards, when Animal went to New Japan Pro Wrestling and Hawk had passed away, they formed a tag team called the Hell Warriors. There you go. Yeah, but Kensuke Sasaki was at this point a happily married man to legendary All Japan Women's Hard Case, Akira Hokuto. And Tetsuya Nakano, we talked about him last week. He had a match with Yoji Angelo on the opening show of the card that me and Chelsea looked at. He was an old-school charger, and he was kind of the equivalent of Kensuke Sasaki. Squat build, perfect wrestler's kind of build, very straight ahead, and Sasaki was very straight ahead as well. So this would prove to be a thoroughly entertaining matchup. What did you think of this one, Marcus?
Yeah, I really liked this match because it was very much, again, that Any Given Sunday thing. These guys was going at it.
Yeah.
You know, from suplexes, kicks, holds, submissions, you name it, they were doing it. It was very much a back and forth type of deal. I mean, I thought it was going one way, and it ended up going another. And I think that, like I said, I know sometimes because of the style, you know, for some people it could take away, and then for some people because of the suddenness of it, it could be like, well, that ended abruptly, so the whole thing kind of goes over the head. But like I said, that's what I appreciated about it. And Nakano brought his game, and Sasaki, you know, kept forcing him to raise it, and that was, like I said, that's what I dug about it. So, you know, I could very much see a series between these two, honestly.
Yeah.
But, you know, obviously, this was a great show, and specifically before the main event, where, you know, we definitely got some familiar faces.
Well, yeah, Kensuke Sasaki and Tetsuya Nakano was a lot of fun to watch just because they were so in your face with each other. It was a very personal feud, I must admit. And it was well worth seeing these two in such great form. Right then, the main event, Yoji Angio and Masahito Kakihara versus Riki Choshu and Yuji Nagata. Yes, that Yuji Nagata, the one that's the old man in New Japan Pro Wrestling now, the guy that looks after the dojo. This was back when he was very, very young, only 2 years into the business, and tagging up with New Japan's biggest draw, essentially, or one of their biggest draws. Yoji Angio was the booker of UWFI, Riki Choshu was the booker of New Japan Pro Wrestling, Kakihara was a young man on the rise, and so was Yuji Nagata. Could you get a more perfect pairing of teams, Marcus?
No, you couldn't. I mean, seeing a young rival, Blue Justice, who's aged quite well.
He doesn't move any differently, does he? Just slightly slower.
No, he can turn up that aggression on a dime.
Yeah.
But no, I mean, it was a really, really great match. And it's almost funny because he almost didn't tag out.
Yeah, yeah. So he wanted to keep going.
Yeah, he was going to keep going. But I think who that was, Anjo.
Yeah,
that was kind of giving him a bit of the business after a while. So that became quite entertaining.
Yeah, I mean, Anjo came in as like trying to portray himself as a bad guy. You could see that when he walked down the ring. He was starting to pay attention to more pro wrestling style things. Kakihara was an outstanding wrestler. Me and Chelsea talked to him about him last week. He was on that show we saw last week as well. And Choshu and Nagata, to be fair, Nagata wrestles more like a UWFI guy than he ever did as a New Japan guy when he was this young. And certainly still wrestles more like a New Japan guy now. You know, back then he didn't even run the ropes very much. So he was kind of perfectly suited for this style. And he laid his kicks in really nice and heavy, especially against Angio and Kakihara, who are known for their kicks. This was interesting to watch these two wrestle.
Yeah, and then, of course, he had the litany of belly to bellies, which he, you know, popped out at the perfect time, which I love. I'm a sucker for a good suplex. I dug it. And again, even though this match, because of how it was going, looked like it was leaning towards one end, didn't necessarily end that way, because I think Masahito.
Yeah, yeah.
And those just going back to back suplex. I'm like, okay. Because I'm set up to a certain style. So when somebody, in my mind, he just got the high tag.
Yeah.
And now he's going with he's revving up the suplexes to hit a big move. And somebody hit a big move.
Yeah. But it wasn't Ryuji.
Exactly. So, yeah. You know, again, just kind of debugging my brain of that. But that's what you kind of appreciate about these styles, because it is any given type of thing. And like I said, it becomes a game of leverage, positioning, and strategy. And, you know, he kind of just popped off that, that was an armbar he got
on.
Yeah. And it was over, of course. But that's how it would be in a real fight. Nobody wants to lose their arms.
No. I mean, Riki Choshu as well. just brilliant. Like, takes this massive barrage of kicks, no sells all of them, and then stands there in a leg lock just to make sure his nose isn't broken. Has a rummage around with his nose. Right then, lads, back to work.
Exactly.
And he was somewhat pissed that Yuji Nagata lost by the arm lock. And slapped him around the head for losing. We're off. Okay. Yes. So, yeah. So, like, when you talk about the New Japan dads, Riki Chosu is the most New Japan dad of all New Japan dads ever. Yeah, it was fun. But this show was generally fun. What did you think of it? Like we said, because you talked about like reacclimatizing yourself to this style of wrestling. Do you think you'd watch more UWFI if you had the chance?
Yeah, I definitely would. Because like I said, it's just appreciating, because it's not, you know, I think, again, because of how it's been presented over here for so long, we think that's actually how wrestling is.
Yeah.
That's I mean, looking at this is the foundation of it. This is where the real skill came in at. Like I said, it's a mental game of almost like quick chess.
Yeah.
And just at any given time, you know, just one wrong move, having your foot or your arm in out of place, and it can cost you. I think this Zack Sabre Jr. Encapsulates this perfectly. Mm. Like, you watch his matches, and you know, he going against somebody like Ishii or like another bruiser, and he's been taking a pounding and getting suplexed and this that for 20 minutes, and his body's beating to hell. But all it takes is one misplaced arm, or you throw the wrong kick at the right time, and it's over.
Yeah.
And while that might not necessarily be the most exciting thing to watch, you know, it really does show you who is the cream of the crop when it comes to you know, just the basics and what this whole thing was built upon. And again, like you said, you know, UFI is kind of one of the pioneers with this.
Yeah.
You know, obviously they brought in New Japan, you know, kind of carried it off. But, you know, without this promotion, without shows like this, we wouldn't be where we are, you know, today.
No.
You know, I was kind of reading up on it, and, you know, some of the guys, one of the guys was like the mentor for Suzuki and brought him in, right?
Yeah, yeah. The original mentor for Suzuki were, yeah. I'm trying to remember the guy, you mean the booker from UWFI who ended up booking, he commentates on UWFI now, and I can't remember his name, but he commentates for New Japan Pro Wrestling now. Yeah. And he was a booker for UWFI, and he was the guy that brought Suzuki into New Japan Pro Wrestling, yeah.
Yeah, so it's, I mean, you know, this was a litany of names. You're looking at guys like, you know, Carl Gotch, you know, the original Tiger Mask, but at this point, I'm like, this is an original?
Yeah. Yes, Satoru Sayama.
Yeah, exactly. You know, Fujiwara, which, because we, you know, that name is, you know, well known within this industry. So, you know, just looking at, you know, names like that, you see where this, you know, this foundation was laid. So, you know, I could definitely watch, you know, more stuff like this. Obviously, because again, the realism. You know, I'm very much a guy who likes watching karate movies and the Bruce Lees and the Chuck Norrises, and you know, when I like stuff to look real. You go throw a roundhouse kick, I wanted to connect and see it and stuff like that. So. Yeah, I definitely dig this out. Definitely see how it wasn't sustainable.
Yeah.
Because, you know, injuries here and there, and like real TKOs and such. And some guys just, they not in the mood to go into a match, you know, however many times a night to get legitimately knocked out. So I understand that. So, you know.
Yeah, plus as well, you can't run these cards very often because it just hurts too much. You can only run this once a month.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, none of this New Japan 2 weeks on, 2 weeks off business. No. We can't do that. We can only do this once a month because this hurts a lot. You know,
exactly.
Booked or not, it still hurts. So, yeah, it was an interesting period of time. And it was interesting to say, like, how much people have paid attention. One person who was really paying attention was Mr. Eric Bischoff. He was obviously in Japan a lot during this time period, from the tail of the New Japan WCW crossovers that were trying to help fill out Monday Nitro, which desperately needed to fill time. And he was paying attention very closely because one wrestling promotion invading another was an interesting angle. Now, we'll talk about that a bit more next time we look at these particular shows. But have you got anything else you'd like to say about UWFI and your experience with this particular card, Marcus?
I'm just thankful you kind of, you know, you threw it in the video chat, and you know, I was able to, you know, be free to watch it. You know, again, it's always good to see what things have evolved to, but you get nowhere and don't really have any full understanding about it until you see where it's where it come from. So this just gave me the opportunity to see that, and again has exposed me to just more straight up and down thorough shoot style pro wrestling. So
yeah, definitely. The next chapter in this particular mini series we're doing as part of the beginner's guide, we'll be looking at New Japan versus UWFI. Now, the one person we haven't talked about today was Nobuhiko Takada, who was off this card with an injury, but he had big things planned from the New Japan crossover, which was a run at the IWGP Heavyweight Championship and a unification match with his real World's Heavyweight Championship. And that's what we'll be looking at the next time we look at UWFI. Now, we have World Tag League Finals coming up. That's something we need to look at too. And we, of course, have our year-end awards. So we might not get back to this for a little while, but we certainly will do, because we're really kind of thinking this is a really important, as Marcus has said, this is such an influential part of pro wrestling history, and it's influenced everything we see today. So we will come back to this, but next week we are probably going to be looking at our awards for 2018. Both shows, the Troopany Show and the Freeland Show, Freeland Wrestling Rewind, will be looking at the awards next week. So we'll call that it for today. So I'd like to thank Mr. Marcus Green for his time today.
Oh, thank you. Always a pleasure.
I appreciate your time, sir. I'd also like to thank you for listening. If you want to listen to other shows, we have Mike Freeland's Wrestling Rewind. Not Mike Wrestling's Freeland Rewind. That would make no sense. Mike Freeland's Wrestling Rewind. Wrestling Rewind. Mike Freeland's Wrestling Rewind. This week features Tony Cotton and Kat talking about professional wrestling. They're recording that as we speak, because I saw them come up on Skype, so I know they're doing it. Okay, so we're recording at the same time as them. We should just call them and add them to us.
Yeah.
I think it might be a shock and crash everything, so we'll not bother doing that right now. But anyway, please listen to them. You can follow us at The Troopany Show on Twitter and at The Troopany Show on Facebook. You can also follow us on Patreon, where you can keep The Troopany Show free forever for everyone. Thank you very much for listening today. Like I said, we'll be back soon next week. Highlights of this week, though, you have to watch World Tag League. I think it was from Wednesday, because there was an insane 8-man tag between Bullet Club, Kazuchika Okada, Rocky Romero, Kushida, and Hiroshi Tanahashi, which has to be seen to be believed. And the joy that Corican Hall went through as they saw their two favorite sons tagging together for the very first time. Thank you for that. And we'll speak to you soon. Bye.